So we're talking about the story of the smiley face killers, which has been an ongoing investigation. It started as a TV piece, ended up on Good Morning America. We've been talking about it all along with Christy Peel, who in the past 12 years, as the story goes, about 80 young, college-age, good-looking, generally academically successful men have just gone missing, and then later on were determined to have drowned accidentally or have committed suicide. And these cases all seem to be bundled along the I-94 corridor. And there were similarities in these stories other than that, because the more they began to look into it, the more they realized that police were just pretty quick to sort of just dismiss the cases. Just say, he was at a party, he walked by the river, he fell and he drowned. And that may be true for many of the cases. It might even be true for most of the cases. But we know for a fact that it's not true for all of them. And the police had already had to reverse themselves once in one well-known case, which we'll talk about just a second. And now we heard in the last half hour on Coast to Coast of a case where the local medical examiner determined that a guy went in the water the night he went missing. 21 days later, they found the body, yet a nationally known and respected private consultant comes in, takes one look at this case and says, no way. Said this guy had been in the water for only as many as 5 days, not the missing 21 days. And yet they're unwilling to change the way it's being investigated in Michigan. It's case closed, even though there's this huge discrepancy. So where have these college guys gone in between the time of the night that they go missing and then the night that they are, the day they're found sometime later on in a body of water? We'll talk about that from what we know and what we can speculate about coming up next. Who is taking these guys? What is happening to them? All that we can know, we'll get to next with Christy Peel on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So, Christy Peel, we were just talking about the case of Todd, is it pronounced Gibe, do you say?
Yes.
Right. In Michigan, who goes missing, and then 21 days later, body is found. Police say that that he drowned that night. He must have wandered off from the party, gone into the water drunk, and drowned. And yet, we heard from Dr. Michael Sikorica, pathologist, who says no. There's no way the body could have been in that water that long unless the local police or the forensic pathologist can come up with some sort of explanation about some temperature differential. It's summertime, and the body should have been much more decomposed than it was. Very likely, he'd only been in the water for 3 to 5 days. So we have this time differential. Let's just call it 15 days time differential between the night he goes missing and the night he ends up being found. What do we know about that? What do we think happened during that period of time? Based on the other stories you've investigated from this corridor of I-94 and these college river town drownings, what do you think happened?
I don't know. I really don't know, because I think that whoever had Todd or whoever Todd was with is a sick individual, the kind of person whose mind works differently than mine. I really don't know. And a lot of people have asked, who is doing this? Why are they doing this? Man, I think when we figure that out, we're going to find a dark human being of a kind that we haven't met yet.
So somebody out there could be working off of this main highway corridor, going to these small college towns, looking for parties and acting as a predator when drunken college guys stagger away from parties, walk out of bars, and are in an area that is isolated for a period of time where they may be vulnerable to being, say, hit with a pipe, hit with a stun gun, lured into a car by a woman, whatever. But they get in and somehow they're missing for a period of time. Why do we do what evidence do we have that this has happened before? Anything?
Happened before.
that this would fit a pattern. Like I guess I'm thinking of the case of Chris Jenkins.
Oh, sure.
Right now, here is a guy who the same profile. This story actually did take place in Minneapolis, and this is explain the story of Chris Jenkins and what did police say happened to what they later on had to admit to.
Sure. Chris Jenkins was last seen at a downtown Minneapolis bar on Halloween 2002. He was got in a verbal discussion with someone, a bouncer, well, off-duty cop at the bar, and he was kicked out. He was kicked out. It was a very cold night, without his coat, without his cell phone, without his wallet, and he was left on the street. So he was missing for several months. They found him in February in the Mississippi River, and right away, the private investigator that Chris's parents hired said, all right, we've got a homicide here. There was different information that he was getting on the streets. And then when they found Chris, he was had on some clogs, might not like slip-on shoes that didn't fit quite right. They were loose, and his pants were, you know, Halloween costume, kind of that, you know, cheapy fabric. It was all, his shirt was tucked in, he was all put together, and he was on his back, which is very unusual in a typical drowning case. Victims are found on their stomach. And police were saying that, you know, he jumped off the bridge, that, and they still maintain, last I heard, that he somehow was thrown off that bridge. But initially they said it was an accident. That case was closed. At some point they told his family it was a suicide. Needless to say, case closed. And then they, after some information came forward, they reopened that case as a homicide. At this date, it is an inactive, unsolved, open
murder.
Homicide.
Yes. But a murder. And they got information later on that said, oh, no. Yeah, he went, you know, he was killed. And so now they're willing to say, oh, well, he must have been murdered. But for the longest time, they were willing to just say, oh, it was accidental, even though he had both his shoes on, his shirt tucked in, and he was found on his back.
Yes, and his mother just came out with a book. Her website is footprintsofcourage.com, and that's the name of her book. And she goes through everything. I mean, she has done amazing research, and all the police records, everything is documented in that book. But there were many signs right from the beginning that something was wrong. And that's something that we've seen in so many of these cases, is that, you know, right away, things are not right. And it's just that I think when you look at them individually, you don't see that. And I don't blame these police officers. They're not, you know, trying to make some big, massive conspiracy. They're doing their jobs, and they've seen, you know, they see kids go missing and college kids go missing. It's just that you have to look at them on an individual basis. You can't close a case before you get all the information, before toxicology reports are back. I mean, right. These are the kinds of things that we're seeing. But Chris Jenkins, in all these cases, is the only one that's officially open and a homicide.
And been reversed and said, oh, we were wrong on that one. But there are so many that are exactly like the Chris Jenkins case, or at least seemingly following exactly along the same lines. Now, is there anything that makes you suspect? Have you heard any testimony? Has anybody said anything that would infer that these guys are being captured, they're being held for a period of time, and then after somebody is done with them, then they're taken back to they're drowned not far from where they last went missing?
You know, about a year ago, I was pretty interested in that aspect of it and did a lot of online research and was going to different, you know, I would get the names of the people who these guys were with and go to their Facebook pages and their MySpace accounts and all of that. And then I realized that even if I would get some good information, I can't do anything with it. I don't have a badge. I don't have subpoena power. I can't arrest people. I'm not a trained law enforcement officer. So that's right. When I decided, all right, I am doing nothing but wasting energy here. I can't. The one thing that I can do is get the information, get the right people involved, and get it to police officers.
And it's on Christy's site. If you go to coasttocoastam.com, you just click on to Christy Peel, and it'll take you to the SFKillers.com website. If there's a better name for this investigation to tie this all under the name of, what would it be?
I don't know. I've thought about that. Campus killers, I don't know. I've thought about it, but for this smiley face killer thing, it's sticking. I also have, you know, ChristyPeel.com, and I have the same website on there. I'd like to get rid of the smiley face name. I don't think it's helping anyone, especially not in the eyes of law enforcement, and that's who we need to have believe this stuff. I don't know. If you think of one, you let me know.
No. Well, I think it is interesting how perhaps, as you say, when it's easier to dismiss for some people can just hear it and then just dismiss it out of hand without giving it the attention that it deserves. So a name in this case probably is important. And yet there, you know, some of these cases may produce a consistent quality or a characteristic to them that would beget a new name if the police were willing to continue to investigate. So right now it's smiley face killers just by, that's the only thing that ties all these stories together, or at least seemingly ties together many of them, is the smiley face spray paint that is found, you know, at or near the scene of many of these crimes. Again, whether that has anything to do with anything, nobody knows. So, and I want to take some calls here at the bottom of the hour. And the phones are already ringing, and I'm sure there's lots of people that have questions for you and or suggestions. And so if everybody can just hang on, we'll get to those coming up in a few minutes. And I would encourage you to go through and read the blog entries that Christy has put up on her webpage, in which she goes through this and some of the information that you've included. Talk about the documents that people can click onto, because you mentioned it briefly last hour, that are on the on your webpage.
In the Todd Guybe case, we have some of the newspaper articles that were happened initially right after he went missing. They document when the police believed that he was hit by a car and buried in a shallow grave, and told the family that at one point. That's on there. We have a portion, two big kind of chunks of the letter that were sent to the Michigan officials, the county prosecutor, Tony Tagg, on behalf of Trisha Angeles and Dr. Michael Sicarica, for his parents, that were basically saying, we've got a lot of information, here's some of it. And at the bottom of that letter, you'll notice it says, we have much more information we want to share with you. We never heard back from them. In fact, our calls weren't returned at the end. So they don't even know some of the stuff that we have, because they didn't even seek out to get it at the end. So I think that's important. But the only thing that we omitted on for the public consumption is that there were some kind of more things that were a little bit personal about Todd, and some things that were just too graphic. So for the sake of his family, it doesn't, sure, you know, unless you're a forensic pathologist, it doesn't mean anything. We took that out. The other thing that we have on there is the full letter that was received by Todd's parents from the Michigan State Police, stating that the case will not be reopened.
It will not be, they say, period.
It will not be reopened.
Like, no matter what anybody finds, no matter what evidence may come forward, they will not reopen it.
And what's unfortunate is that Dr. Michael Sicarica, his opinion about the evidence and the decomposition and some of the other things was backed up by 200 professionals, medical examiners. It was at a conference. They took the information there. It wasn't under the, hey, this is a smiley face killer case, guys, agree with us. I mean, it was, these are scientists. Here's the information. What do you think? And they agreed with him. And that was all in this letter. And what Michigan State Police did is they had the woman who's actually responsible for doing autopsies in the county. She reviewed the autopsy, the person who had her job before her did the autopsy. So she's reviewing that, knows the guy, I'm sure. It's a small place. And then said, we did it right. We have no reason to reopen it. And that was it. And it's pretty disappointing, because much of the other information that we said we'd provide to them, they didn't even ask to see.
So at one point there'd been some discussion about a killer cult, or, you know, a group of people traveling across, coordinating together on the internet. And that was an angle of this story. Right now, there is no basis to continue to believe that.
You know, some people still say that. I don't think that there is proof, hard proof. If there is, whoever has that information should be taking it to the FBI and not just talking about it. I think that the most important thing is to get information, take it to law enforcement. But the same night that Todd Guybe went missing, there was another young man in another state. And if they're connected, that's something that law enforcement should be looking at.
Okay. And you're also being assisted in this by a former federal agent?
Hector Boreas, yes, he's a former federal agent. He was responsible for cracking a serial killing ring in Mexico. And he has looked at Todd's information. We've talked extensively about some of the other cases, and he believes that this is the work of a serial killer. And more than one person, because of the time and the different states that this is happening in. And he continues to look at it and would like to see feds, someone else get involved. And the one thing that has been really exciting is that the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has the file on Todd Guybe. It has the file on Chris Jenkins. It has the file on Patrick Kaisha. I gave them about 300 pages of documentation, filled out some surveys for them. They're making a presentation for some scientists in February, at the end of February. And the goal isn't to say, hey, you guys, there's a smiley face killer out there. Go figure out who it is. It's to say, we continue to see mistakes made in the investigation. We continue to see medical examiners missing some key pieces of information. If you get a case like this, wait until you get the toxicology reports back. And so that they're going at it from a scientific angle, which is what this stuff needs. The smiley face graffiti business isn't advancing it in the circles where something can get done.
And so this former federal agent, too, as he's looked at it, he's had experience. Why does he believe the federal agents like him that would have investigated this case, as he found a serial killer somewhere else, why does he believe nobody is investigating this?
You know, when we've talked about it, when the feds did go in and look at it, they looked at the information in La Crosse, and that information, from what my understanding of what happened there, is that they looked at the police files, compared them, and said everything was done properly. And I don't think that they looked at anything from other states, and I don't...
Oh, we lost her. Okay. I don't know what happened there. Phone dropped out. Those things can happen. Sometimes, I have a remote phone and the power could just go dead on you, or you can have a power outage. But whatever the case is, we had her there and then we didn't. So we can, as I mentioned, we're going to go to the phones early anyway, and we'll take some of those phone calls coming up in just a second while we hope to reestablish contact with Christy Peel. So we can go ahead and grab that. Christy, I don't know what happened to your phone, but glad you're back because you were just... That's okay. So you were just saying then about why the federal agents may not be responding to this. They went to the La Crosse, Wisconsin case. They just looked at it. They say all the T's were crossed, all the I's were dotted. Nothing for us to do here.
That's my understanding of what happened there.
Okay. And the La Crosse, Wisconsin case was?
There were several. I believe there's been eight. And there was actually a young man who last night went missing in La Crosse, and there's looking for him, and there's footprints that actually lead to the water in his case. I keep getting emails about him.
Last night in La Crosse?
2 a.m. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, and so of the 80 cases then that you look at, I mean, it would be amazing to think that all 80 cases are all connected and that all 80 people are the victims of the same person. Somebody with the expertise like this guy Hector you spoke of, what does he think likely is a scenario? Has he said anything about the number of victims that he thinks, if you looking at the cases, that he would tie together?
He hasn't. I haven't asked him that specifically because when I talk with him, it's about this specific case and this specific case, or, remember when we saw this and that case? I mean, we talk kind of, individually. But even if, I believe that there are accidents. Accidents happen, absolutely. And some of these guys have only been lumped into all of this because they fit the profile, they're the right age. Definitely accidents happen. We're not seeing these same accidents happen with women. We're not seeing them happen over spring break when people are drinking, near water. We're not seeing them happen over the 4th of July when people are drinking near water. So even if you say of those 80, 40 were accidents, let's say half were accidents, 20% were suicides. Okay, that still leaves you with a significant number for someone to be doing this. And even if they're not connected, we got to figure out what happened to those young men. They deserve it.
And nobody else is doing this right now other than you and then the people that you can bring in along the way. What would you like to see happen as a result of tonight's show?
I would like people to get on the website, contact the prosecutor in Michigan, tell him what you think, and then support what the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is doing. I have a Facebook page that is, you know, I'm trying to get big numbers so we can take it to a group someday and say, look, we have 50,000 people who believe something's going on, help us.
Right.
So all of those links are on my website, which I know you can get to by your website.
Yep, coasttocoastam.com. It'll take you right there. And then also you can find out more about Dr. Michael Sicarica, who we had on last hour. Obviously, he has what people call the bona fides to be making the claims that he is, that there's something about this investigation in Michigan that's just wrong, and they ought to reopen it. So especially if you're a Michigan taxpayer, if you're a Michigan resident, go take a look at what your state has determined is not worth looking into again, and said they will not reopen this case, no matter what evidence comes forward. What's that about? Go find out more by starting at coasttocoastam.com. Your questions, your comments for Christy Peel to the top of the hour, and then we'll do open lines for the rest of the night on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, so we already got a couple of people lined up who have questions about the so-called smiley face killers and the work of Christy Peel. We have a half hour with her, and we'll take advantage of this coming up next with your questions and comments about this, what appears to be a string of disappearances across the upper Midwest, and how nobody is investigating this. This goes all the way to New York. This goes all the way into the East Coast. These small college towns experience kind of the same phenomenon. It doesn't happen to women who are leaving parties. It just keeps happening to men. They leave a party by themselves. They get kicked out of a bar by themselves. They're walking. They disappear. And sometime later on, their body is found in the water. And in one case, only one case we know of, the police said, okay, we were wrong. It was an accidental drowning. That's one. And then the other case that we heard tonight is in the state of Michigan, where the independent consultant came in to look at the pathology report and said, this isn't right. It's got to be reopened. And Michigan is saying no. So where are you with this? What is it that you think would inform this conversation? And do you have concerns that we just haven't brought up? We'll get to it next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right. Dave is in Columbus, Ohio on Coast to Coast for Christy Peel, investigator in the case that remains the smiley face killers case until another name comes up. Hey, Dave.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. You're talking with Christy Peel. Go ahead.
Yeah. Real quick. I got a couple of questions that might help you out. Also, there might be a case that happened here in Columbus that might be related. First of all, I want to know, there seems to be always this connection with water. Is there a particular pipe of a lake or whatever the victims are found in? Is there a specific depth that seems to be associated with it?
No, there have been victims that have been found in creeks, shallow water, lakes, the Mississippi River. Even there was one victim in a fountain.
So in other words, so now my next question is, does it seem to be that the bodies are placed so they'll be found deliberately?
Some people think that it would make sense that if you wanted some evidence to be lost, that you would put the body in a place where people would find it after they quit looking. You know,
the reason I'm asking the question is I'm trying to determine whether or not there might be some kind of significance to the fact that the bodies are found in water, so that the perpetrators want the bodies to be found. See what I'm saying? So
uh-huh.
It means something to them, and so they want the body to be found as part of this particular act that they're involved in. The reason why I'm asking is because there's a case that happened in Columbus where we had somebody who fits the profile that disappeared, but the body was never found. And so what I'm wondering is it possible that this victim was put in a nearby river, by the way? There was a river that wasn't that far away, and they just weren't, in other words, the body just didn't surface, or the river took it too far away and it got caught in the water and nobody was dredging the river, you know, and they just didn't found it. They never found it. That's what I'm trying to figure out by asking
okay.
that question.
All right, Christy, go ahead.
And are you talking about Brian Schaefer?
You know, I think that might be his name. I'm not sure because I'm retired from doing investigation stuff. Mm-hmm. I quit before that case went down. It was just like he disappeared. from a bar on campus, and he was never found. His dad was trying to find him for a number of years, and he died. So it's an unsolved case.
Is that Brian Schaefer?
That's Brian Schaefer. His father was killed in Katrina, Hurricane Katrina. Yeah, very sad. He spent his, you know, the last years of his life really trying to figure out what happened to his son and died not knowing. So some people think that, I guess I've heard a couple of different things. Either the body is put somewhere and then it's placed, you know, in a river or wherever, and it isn't found by accident. I mean, they want it to be found, but for some reason it isn't found. Other people think that while these young men are being held, possibly there would be some trauma that could accidentally happen. Like in the case of Todd Guy, but there was no trauma physical that was obvious on his body. Now, if you're holding someone and, you know, a bone is accidentally broken or there's a big fight and there is some evidence that would be on that victim, then it may be in your best interest to ensure that that body is never found.
It does. Julie, west of the Rockies, Spokane, Washington, for Christy Peel, investigating this string of college-age men's disappearances, many of which may be connected, but nobody is investigating other than Christy. Go ahead, Julie.
Yes. Just a quick note. My son plays Xbox Live, and on the Fallout 3 game, one of the icons that you can pick to be you has a smiley face on it.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids are playing these games down in their basement. And also, this is the type of game that they can talk to each other.
Yeah, there's that, and of course, and thank you, Julie. There's Watchmen, the movie that had that connection to a smiley face. In the case of both the graphic novel and the movie, it was Watchmen with the smiley face with a bullet hole in it. I mean, it's so prevalent a symbol that it's almost hard to get a grip on how it could be being used specifically in this case. But her point is well taken. That kind of thing, you know, it's chicken and egg on how that pops up in Xbox and whether or not people are inspired by it. Michael's in Green Bay on Coast to Coast for Christy Peel. Michael?
I had a quick question and comment for Christy. First, I can't believe that this is the first time I've ever heard in a public forum about these series of killings. I attended Viterbo University in La Crosse, Wisconsin from 2002 to 2006. And in that time, I think two or three young men were found after drinking at the bars, were found in the Mississippi River. You know, when it happened after the second and third times, college students start to assemble and start to discuss this.
Right.
And there was a palpable, I don't know how to put it, indifference or negligence of the local law enforcement, that people would come forward and say, I saw this guy on 3rd Street last night, you know, coming out of the Helm or the other bars. And they would say, you know, thank you. We got a guy working on it. But there was a certain dismissive tone about it. I guess I just can't believe that this is, I mean, other than obscure newspaper articles, this is the first time I've ever heard it discussed in a public forum.
Well, good.
And also, just a quick question asked Christy I've only heard about this along stretches along the Mississippi River in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Could you possibly tell maybe a little more descriptively geographically the belt along which this is expanding?
Fair enough. Go ahead, Christy.
Sure. It goes all the way from Minnesota over to New York State. There's some, we were talking earlier about Columbus, Ohio. There was just in the last couple weeks, a man found in Montana. This is a long, you know, I think it's kind of that 94 corridor, but it certainly spreads out beyond that. What we do know is that we're finding this in Midwest, colder climates, not on, you know, portions of this country that are on the ocean or that are in warmer climates. It's primarily colder climates during the winter. Todd Guy is one of the rare ones where it's one of the summer months.
Yeah, let's highlight that too a little bit, that when the summer comes along, these cases drop down dramatically. They don't happen. It seems to only happen when college is in session. And you would think that if it's true that young college men just get drunk and then they go and they accidentally drown, that this would be happening all the time in the South, the Southwest, California, and these we statistically don't see the same numbers, correct?
That's right. We're not finding it in any of the places when you'd expect it. I said before spring break, I mean, that's when people, the goal for a lot of college students is to drink, and most of the places where they go are completely surrounded by water, and it's not happening then. It's happening when they're trying to get fully clothed from a bar to their dorm, and then somehow they're ending up the other direction in the water.
Eric is in Michigan on Coast to Coast for Christy Peel. Eric?
Yes, Ian.
Go ahead.
Okay. There's a retired FBI agent from California who has investigated similar murder scenarios, and he ultimately connected them with satanic ritualistic groups and ultimately connected it to a covert ops community of the intel, like CIA, et cetera. And that indirectly has been corroborated by a guy by the name of Alan Shefflin, who Whitley Strieber interviewed and author of Mind Manipulators. Of course, there's Kathy O'Brien, Mark Phillips, Transformation of America.
Right. Okay. And when were those kids? That was Kathy Phillips, that's decades ago, correct?
Okay, but let me bring it up to date right now.
Okay.
Okay, there is a fellow out of Ohio, Cleveland, I believe, Stan Monteith, Radio Liberty, interviewed him several times. Russ Dizdar, he now is a minister after being law enforcement and has a website, Ian Shatter the Darkness. He authored a book similar to that name, Shatter the Darkness. I think it's .net. But he has been bringing the street people off the street to care for them. And ultimately, he discovered these mind control scenarios that they reveal to him, and it's really, really astonishing. And then
go ahead. We have time for one more. Go ahead.
This one is William H. Kennedy, an investigative journal, williamhkennedy.com. Between the three of them, Ian, I would say her best leads are going to be there for a viable murder explanation.
Okay.
And they're involved in this.
That's very interesting. I appreciate that. I'm sure Christy got that information. I'll be clicking onto William H. Kennedy coming up at the top of the hour. Jeff is in Tempe, Arizona, on a wild card line for Christy Peel. Jeff?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead. You're talking with Christy.
Hi, Christy.
Hi.
Yeah, I've been actually following this on Coast to Coast for a while, and I didn't really remember if you said it before, but right now you said something about a word that was in two locations at once. You said it was Sinawa.
Sisinawa.
I remember in the past, there was, if you slightly, I don't know, variate the word and you pronounce it Sinawa, in ancient Egyptian, it means he who traveled alone. And it was a story of a man who was a righteous man. He wanted to serve the poor. He was a physician, and he was forced to kill his friend, I guess for the greater of the good, kind of like, I don't know, maybe a surgeon would look at it where you cut out cancer, you cut out some good tissue around it for the greater good of the whole, I guess, is the way that his life story went.
Well, that's an interesting connection. I hadn't heard that before, but the address connection was the Sisinawa, but sure. I mean, at this point, at least people are thinking about it here, Christy. They're trying to find ways to try to romance the stone here, to get an angle on the story, to try to break through what seems like a logjam at the bureaucratic level.
You know, I'm amazed at the people. My website, my blog, when I launched it a year ago, I had no idea that so many people would be so interested. I just wanted a place where I could put information I found. And there's a woman actually who bought, there's actually three missing cases in the Midwest right now, one in Wisconsin, one in Minnesota, and one in Iowa, all happened the same week in January. All that information is on my site. And, you know, please look at their pictures. Let's hope that they're not part of this and that they come home safely and soon. But she wanted to see if maybe someone with a pilot's license could be involved. So she purchased with her own money FAA logs to see if someone had been to all three airports. I mean, people are passionate about this.
That's very interesting. I hadn't even thought about that angle. A private pilot would make a lot of sense. Luis is in Utah on a wild card line And then we'll go to open lines coming up at the top of the hour. Luis, you're talking with Christy Peel. Go ahead.
Hey, and good show tonight.
Thank you.
Christy, have you ever thought about getting a hold of some psychics to bring them in and I'll listen off the air?
Yeah, I don't always have a lot of faith in the whole psychic thing, but every little thing helps. Have you talked to anybody, or has anybody come forward to you?
Different people have, and the families all feel differently about that. Some use them quite frequently, and some want nothing to do with them. So at this point, you know, it's their sons. I kind of want to do what they want. And the other thing is that law enforcement frequently aren't interested, and we don't need any more reasons for them to write this off.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Again, if you're just tuning in, I'd recommend to go back and catch from the beginning on this on Streamlink. We're talking with Christy Peel, investigative reporter, made it on Good Morning America with this story, and then it sort of stalled, but she's continuing with the investigation on her own and looking up these 80 files and continuing to go through the material, find medical examiners that are willing to review it, find federal agents that are willing to give some perspective, lawyers, anybody she can, to try to come to a determination whether or not there could be a serial killer at work that local police authorities have not been able to coordinate an investigation on, or just don't seem to care. Tim is in Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast for Christy Peel. Tim?
Yeah, how you doing tonight?
Good. Just got a minute for you.
Yeah, I have a question. We're investigating a case in Pennsylvania called the Todd Cease case. I was asking Christy, has he ever heard of it?
Spell the last name for me.
Todd Cease, S-E-E-S.
I have not.
Now, this is very strange. This guy went missing for 3 days. It's in Northumberland, Pennsylvania. It was back 2005. He took his ATV up the mountain looking for preseason deer. And his wife was concerned because he didn't come home the next day. She called the authorities. They searched the mountain. There was a little pond right near his house. They went in there with scuba divers. They couldn't find nothing. They had no idea what this guy just fell off the face of the earth. 3 days later, they found something near the pond, which looked white, but they couldn't get to it because the brush was too thick. So they brought in all this equipment to tear it down. Here it was him. He was found dead. They found him in his underwear. When they found the body, they wouldn't give him his wife the body. They sent it down to Allentown, Pennsylvania, and did an autopsy. Well, they couldn't determine why he died. So the body was actually sent to Fort Indian Town Gap, which is near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Now, it's kind of strange that this happened. Why would they send this body to Fort Indian Town Gap? But now they're saying that this was like, they did a toxicology report. They had no idea why he died. But later, the local authorities said he died of a drug overdose, and the family is like furious over this because there's no way. There's also more information that I have that, you know, if you could email me or anything, I would definitely get you.
Well, Tim, you can link onto the webpage, right, okay. Christy? And you can contact Christy from there. Is that right, Christy?
Yep, right on the website there's a contact us, and you can contact me right there. My email's up there.
And that's you can link up to that, Tim, at your convenience at coasttocoastam.com and look for the Christy Peel connection. Our last call from Alan, I believe, for Christy Peel. He's from Orlando on Coast to Coast on the first-time caller line. Alan?
Hey, Christy, what's going on?
Hi, how are you?
Hey, being a like late 20s and a drunk, this is something that's near and dear to my heart. I was wondering what kind of tortures or stuff, because I heard about that looking into it on the news and such. Are we talking about that the MEs aren't finding? And a second question is, what would be that you've heard would be the psychological profile of someone who would be doing something like this? Because I heard there was some guy saying it was like a mess about, or like someone who wasn't successful, but it seems like it's kind of more put together than just some goofball.
All right. Well, interesting thought. Chris, you want to comment on that? In the sexual piece, we don't really have much evidence, correct? It's just some assumption on that?
That's right. And if there's, you know, he talked about torture. If there's torture, there's nothing being left on the bodies. No sign of
right.
that.
Right. But certainly being kept in captivity would be torture enough, and what more than that, we don't know. But and then the other question that he threw out there at the end?
You know, the feds are saying this is impossible. Serial killers don't work together. We don't have, you know, we don't have any evidence of this happening before. You know, my answer to that is, you know, before Hitler, we didn't think that was possible either. So I don't know what kind of monster we're dealing with.
But there have been cases of serial killers that have worked in tandem. I mean, that's not, this would not be a first, that there would be some sort of competition or there would be people who sort of tag teamed on something like this.
And we know that these folks are well-funded, well-traveled, and awfully good at what they do.
As sad as that is to say, thank you so much for you being so good at what you do. You keep up the good work. Even if in the end it turns out to be five of these cases connected, there will have been nobody else trying to connect them. And so thank you for keeping the pressure on, keeping the story up. Everybody log on to Christie's website. Just go through coasttocoastam.com and let us know, Christie, when you've got an update coming up, okay? We'll get you back on right away. That's Christie Peel, reporter. Open lines. Everybody else, we'll clear out the phones, and you take us where you're going to take us coming up next on Coast to Coast.